Oh, you made it. You're finally here. Welcome to Half Cocktails, a place where we have a great time celebrating science, the social contract, and just plain old congeniality. Dare I say, a place where we seek a path to peace, prosperity, and exploration amongst the stars. What I'm talking about is an all-inclusive society, meaning if you're not on board with the understanding that we all agree to share rules, norms, and respect, we're not obligated to even consider your opinion, because the social contract is that important to a civil society. I'm your friend and host, Dan, the worshiping Dionysus man, sipping on some science today, welcoming any new listeners joining us. We're having a good time. We hope you're here having a good time, too. Stay tuned until the end of the show. We're going to be talking about a celebrity that moonlights as a vigilante superhero, and their identity will shock you.
Ooh.
As always, I am joined in the lounge today by some fine and fascinating guests. Ron, the geologist apologist. How are you doing today, Ron?
I am excelente, senor.
Excelente. Good to hear. Good to hear. We got a really fun and informative show for you today. Brought to you by Strickland Propane, the best propane and propane accessories. Okay, I can do that better.
Taste the meat, not the heat.
Damn it, Bobby. Brought to you by Strickland Propane, the best propane and propane accessories this side of Texas. Speaking of Texas, we'll take a look back at the Siege of Waco that ended on April 19th, 1993. Have some hot science news. Talk about the Pleistocene Park. Talk mammoths and dodos coming back soon. And NASA sending out a new probe for Jupiter's moon Europa to check for life. We'll be talking about that. Snake oil involving recycling. Eager to get to that one. We're going to play a rousing rendition of Fact-Checking Time, of course, and we will wrap things up with a feel-good story. We do encourage you to reach out to us at halfcocktails@gmail.com. Maybe you want to send us a text or voicemail. So that number is 443-499-8253. You can just drop a comment on our TikTok, Facebook, or Instagram if that's not your thing. But for now, we're going to hop in that time machine.
Nothing would be better than a look at days of yesteryear in our time machine.
Okay, Ron, we are, not to date us, but we're old enough to remember. I don't know if you remember, I remember. The Branch Davidians and the compound in Waco, Texas getting raided by the ATF and the FBI.
I do recall that.
It was big, big news. And I remember at the time thinking, I was on the side of the government, right? As a child, I was.
Well, yeah, these are criminals. Go get them.
Yeah, like. Well, if they decided to open fire, they're probably doing something pretty messed up,
right? And you know that party was pretty fire.
Oh,
too soon.
It did. The siege did burn down the compound. And we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Let's start with some backstory that led up to this ATF FBI raiding of a religious compound that ended in 70 some deaths and the whole place getting burned down. It was a disaster. The Davidians were a Christian Seventh-day Adventist church sect that was founded in 1929 by this guy named Victor Hotef, a Bulgarian immigrant. And he set it up in L.A., and he was, you know, he had his new interpretations of biblical prophecy. And he believed that he had been called to prepare a group of faithful believers for the return of Jesus Christ.
Jesus. It's always some prophecy.
You know, this is a theme, right? This isn't even, there's nothing original about this.
No.
Hey, you know, Joseph Smith, we did that whole Mormon episode. Like, Joseph Smith did the exact same thing. Like, I've got new shit. I will gather a new group to tell them when Jesus is coming back.
New shit, same as the old shit.
Yeah, exactly. The dude died, Victor Hotef died in 1955. The leadership of the Davidian movement passed to his wife, which is actually super progressive for 1955.
Absolutely.
Right? You know, normally it would be the son, right? Mm-hmm. Oldest son, just like a king. Later, after his wife, it was just a series of leaders, including a guy named Benjamin Roden, who started to introduce his own doctrines and teachings and practices. But then in the 60s, as often does with many churches, a schism occurs, right? Like the Martin Luther and the Protestants in Europe banging the new rules. Schism! Now we got two churches because there's some specifics we don't agree with. So the Davidians splintered, and it led to the formation of a new group called the Branch Davidians. This was led by this charismatic guy named Vernon Howell, who later changed his name to David Koresh. So that's the more recognizable name, David Koresh. Right. This is the same guy.
The charismatic leader.
Yeah, very, very charismatic guy, who also claimed to be a prophet, but he added he is the final interpreter of biblical prophecy. So when he came along, he was like, one of my prophecies is God said, I'm the last guy to give you new prophecies.
I see.
Ah, right.
And all the women in the cult must sleep with me as well, no doubt. Yes.
We'll get to that, Ron. We'll get there. Yes, it happened.
I mean, other than money and power, that's the only other reason to be a cult leader.
Right. This is kind of like getting the genie and like your first two friends, you know, make their wishes for the genie, and then it gets to you, and you're like, and my first wish is I get all the wishes, and no one else gets any wishes.
So, ha ha.
Ha ha! So, they get their compound going in Texas under Koresh's leadership. You know what? Let me back up. I don't feel like I'm adding enough story here in the background. Okay, so we've got this schism. The guy, Benjamin Roden, when he died, Branch Davidians fell to his wife, Lois Roden, and she liked Koresh better than her own son.
Wow.
And that was a big schism that happened after they'd gotten to Texas, before Koresh came into power. So it was a schism and a schism. And when she died, it was a big kind of standoff, big fight between George Roden and David Koresh, that actually George Roden ran Koresh and his team out of the compound at gunpoint in 1984. So 20 years of kind of just trying to grow the group, and now, boom, the real schism. Like, they moved from LA to Texas. Well, this is the final schism, we'll call it. So the estate of that lady, Lois Roden, went into probate in the mid-80s, and Koresh, while that was happening, he tried to seize the compound by force. Didn't work. And the guy Roden digs up this you can't make this shit up. He digs up this casket from the Davidian cemetery and challenged Koresh. It was like, resurrection fight, bro. We got a corpse. Let's bring her back from the dead. First guy to do it's the true prophet.
Prove it, man. Do it.
If you're this guy Roden digging up a corpse, you have to believe your own bullshit.
Yeah, you fully drunk the Kool-Aid at that point.
And unless you've got some David Blaine magic trick, some fucking Chris Angel mind freak trick to fake bringing her back to life, unless you've already got that lined up, the only reason to do this is because you actually believe you're going to kick this guy's ass and it's going to work, damn it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some kind of a medical diagnosis for the folks that do start believing their own bullshit to the point where it's legitimate true belief. Started off as bullshit, they know it, but not anymore. Now it's become real.
Yeah. So like I often joke, I started worshiping Hermes to piss off my parents, but now like I actually worship Hermes. Like it just kind of happened. Like I don't think it's the extreme part because I haven't gotten to the point where I'm like, no, if I pray to him, Hermes is going to show up and give me like a magic artifact from Zeus. Damn it. He's going to do it. Watch. But that's the level of claim. Like, you dig up a corpse and bring it into church and challenge somebody to a resurrection contest.
Bold. Really very bold.
Very bold. Well, shocker, neither were able to resurrect her.
Shocked.
Koresh did go to the police and accused Roden of corpse abuse. But get this, they couldn't prove it. So the prosecutors are like, we're not going to file charges. Like, you can't just walk in and claim he's abusing a corpse. So Koresh and seven other guys in November 1987, they try to bust in and get and take photographs of the casket because the guy still has the corpse and he's still trying to resurrect it.
Well, he's persistent.
It's in the church. It's still there. They fucking had a gunfight that lasted about 20 minutes before the sheriffs showed up, in which the rodent dude got wounded.
Damn.
Yeah. Koresh and his companions were tried for attempted murder in April 1988. The seven companions were acquitted. The jury, Koresh got a hung jury. And the county prosecutors were like, okay, well, let's just not waste any more time and resources on this.
Right.
At one point, they tried to bring the casket to court, but the judge refused to use it as evidence for a case, saying a casket has no place in a courtroom. The guy, Roden, actually admitted in court that he attempted to resurrect and the lady on three different occasions. So that dude, Roden, eventually, he got put in jail for contempt of court charges, yelling at the judge.
Yeah.
Which is a thing. Everybody listening, if there are current courtroom trials in America going on right now, not in the time machine, just recognize we have a long history of jailing people who yell at judges.
So dial it down.
Dial it down. It's nothing special, by the way. I didn't expect that to come up, but here we are. So yeah, the guy got jailed. He was fucking sitting in jail. And while he was in jail, Koresh moved on the compound to take it over. Believe it or not, that guy, Roden, actually used an axe to kill another Davidian in mid-19 after he got out of jail.
Hardcore.
The other Davidian guy named Adair had a vision that God chose him to be the next Messiah. And he went to the guy, Roden, and told him about it.
No, it's me.
Roden picked up an axe and cut him up. It's so fucking hardcore. He actually got off on an insanity defense, mm-hmm. and just got committed to a mental hospital.
Wow.
And that's when Koresh, who had physical control of the church, actually moved and paid off back taxes on the land that were owed by Roden, and then he got legal control. So he not only controlled it physically, but that's when Koresh got legal control of the compound. So now that Koresh in 10-year struggle to gain absolute power in the Branch Davidian sect, now he has it. He August 1989, he releases an audio tape called New Light, and that's where he says God told him to procreate with the women and establish a House of David.
I'm sorry, ladies, I have to. God said.
This involves separating married couples.
Ooh.
And they had to agree that only David Koresh could have sex with the wives, and the men have to be celibate.
Wow.
Yeah. Because God said, we got to start building an army of God to prepare for the end of days and salvation.
So you're not really going to get many new disciples at this point. This is kind of your end game has begun.
Could you imagine?
Come join my cult where you will be celibate and I bang everyone.
Could you imagine the couple, like the outreach, like, we'd like you to join the church. Well, you know, I really, I'm with this Christ coming back soon. I really feel he's coming back, but I just don't know how I feel about becoming celibate and watching this guy bang my wife. What do you think, honey? Why is it every fucking time that it gets here?
Every
right?
time.
Like, every fucking time some man goes crazy, because I've never seen, there are cults that have been started by women. But they don't end up here. The ones started by women never end up here. Every fucking cult that's started by a man ends up here.
Yeah, it devolves into some weird sex fantasy.
Right. And possessive, like, I get the sex, you don't get the sex. Other men? No. Just for me. And I will give Joseph Smith, the reason the Mormon church exploded was he was like, no, it's not just me. You guys are get it too, right? Everybody, you get extra wives. You get, he's like fucking Oprah of polygamy over there. anyway, yeah. So that's when he announced it, 1989. He 1990 is actually when he changed his name from Howell to David Koresh. By 1992, he'd sold off most of the land except for that core 70 some acres in just outside of Waco. And they were consolidating and like taking down buildings to take the materials to construct this big main chapel and apartments and water tanks. Basically, it was kind of spread out in a community, and he started pulling it inward and focusing it into a main compound.
Okay.
Like, right. So we're all in one central place. We're not 77 acres is pretty big. So you're on one end or the other, you know, I might not see you for a couple of weeks because we live on either side of the giant. Well, then that was the core, right? Like, so anyway, he shrinking it geographically and concentrating the people, for this big, holy war that he is, prophesied. And that's when they started to stockpile guns and ammunition.
You know, you gotta defend the harem.
You gotta defend the harem. Oh yeah, and just like Joseph Smith, some young girls, young as 12 or 13, getting pregnant. You know, he fathered at least a dozen children that we know of. In February 1993, the Waco Tribune Herald began a series of stories by a couple of journalists. Again, journalists do a lot of great work for this country. I hate that they're vilified.
Oh, yeah.
They're the one, a couple of journalists, Mark England and Darlene McCormick, they kind of busted it open. They had a series called The Sinful Messiah. To quote the opening passage of the first one is, "If you're a Branch Davidian, Christ lives on a threadbare piece of land 10 miles east called Mount Carmel. He has dimples, claims a ninth grade education, married his legal wife when she was 14, enjoys a beer now and then, plays a mean guitar, reportedly packs a 9mm Glock, and keeps an arsenal of military assault rifles, and willingly admits that he is a sinner without equal."
Jesus.
And he had a Jesus look. If you find pictures of him,
yeah, he was going for something for sure. He was going for the look.
They brought up the physical abuse of children in the compound, the statutory rape, underage brides, his advocacy of polygamy for himself. They claimed that he had announced he was entitled to at least 140 wives.
Wow, that seems tough,
right?
I don't think so. I'm not signing up for that.
That's a lot of work, man. I have other interests besides fucking. It's not the only interest in my life. The in 92, before these articles came out, the chief deputy in the area of the county sheriff's office had contacted the ATF, and because some UPS driver was delivering to the compound and dropped a package, and it broke open, and it was full of hand grenades.
Oh, red flag.
Yeah. Yeah, so the UPS guy went to the sheriff and was like, yeah, hand grenades. And then I looked into it. I guess one of these guys that's sending him all these packages is an actual arms dealer.
Oh, fuck.
So the ATF that year opened an investigation, classified as sensitive, calling for a high degree of oversight. They had reports, neighbors reported automatic gunfire. One of the neighbors of the compound was an army vet and had contacted the sheriff and was like, "I know what automatic machine guns sound like, and they're going crazy over there."
Horrible neighbor.
Yeah, right. How dare he? In Texas? Ugh, such a you wouldn't think of a Texan doing that today, would you?
No.
30 years later, how far we've come. I can't paint all Texans with the same brush. That's not fair.
No.
There are non-gun fetishists in Texas. They exist. They were getting tons of packages to convert the AR-15s into automatic weapons, which still remain. I mean, AR-15s are super, super popular. They're still sold everywhere today. I don't know how popular those kits are, if those kits are still legal or not.
Right.
I remember knowing all about them in the 90s.
They were cool, man. That's so badass. It's like, oh, Jesus. The way I used to think.
Right. Yeah. we grow up shooting out in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a leisure activity to us as kids.
Right. Who wouldn't want to fire off that many rounds per second out in the desert? That'd be fun.
That would be fun, right? You get to set up all the bottles and cans and targets and just... I don't even have to aim. I took all the skill out.
And now people can do that at schools. Yay.
Oh, boy. Well, I was going to say that got dark, but I'm about to get to the darkest part of this story.
Oh shit! Here we go.
Wow, this is going really long. I gotta speed this up. So anyway, they really ham-fistedly monitor the compound. They like had fake college students living across the street watching them, but like they didn't have them maintain any kind of college student schedule. They were all their mid-30s. They had expensive cars. It was pretty obvious. Also, they got tipped off the day of the raid because a reporter that had found out about it ahead of time asked a postman how to get there, and the postman was Koresh's brother-in-law. Everybody was in the group because he married everybody, all the women. So he told him, he was like, hey, people are coming. They show up and the Davidians are fucking armed and ready. And the ATF even got told, the local sheriff, the branch Davidians knew that they were coming, and they were like, fuck it, we're doing it, we're going in. So there was no surprise. The ATF knew there was no surprise. They show up, and Koresh had told they had an undercover agent that they sent into the compound that Koresh knew was an undercover agent. And I guess he told him beforehand, he went up to the undercover agent and even told him, like, yeah, we know this raid's coming and we know you're an agent. He was like, I gotta go. I'm waiting for a fucking package. I gotta go.
I left my stove on. Yeah.
I left my stove on. I haven't walked my dog in 2 weeks. I gotta go, guys. And everybody was just praying when he left. And the survivors of afterwards wrote that Koresh ordered males to begin arming and taking up the defensive positions, and women, children to go take cover in their rooms. He did say he's going to try and speak to them, and then what happened after that would be up to the agents. And about 9:45, the ATF arrived in a convoy of vehicles that included uniformed SWAT style tactical gear personnel. And that's when they showed up. The ATF claims they heard shots coming from in the compound. Branch Davidian survivors claim the first shots were the ATF firing on the compound. So it's possible. People have suggested maybe somebody accidentally shot a weapon, maybe an ATF agent, maybe a Branch Davidian. But we don't know because there's no, you know, video, you know, when you have the conflicting accounts like that. Other reports claim the first shots were ATF fired by the ATF dog team sent to kill the dogs that were in the Branch Davidian kennel there on the compound. We don't know. There were three helicopters the Army National Guard were using as aerial distraction. All of those helicopters took incoming fire. So we know that wasn't from the ATF.
Right.
So the Davidians were shooting.
Yeah.
Koresh got wounded. He got shot in the hand and stomach, like really fast. Within a minute of the raid start, one of the Branch Davidians called emergency services, asking for a ceasefire. Audio tapes recorded that saying, hear him saying, here they come again. That's them shooting. That's not us, yelling into the phone. Again, that could have been theatrics.
Right.
We don't know. The first ATF casualty was an agent who had made it to the west side of the compound. Got fired on. Got shot. Things were just chaotic firefight. The helicopters pulled away because they were getting shot at. They actually hit the helicopters, but didn't injure any of the crew members. So the helicopters left because, you know, they're like, oh, we're Army National Guard. We're just supposed to be distracting these guys. Right. They're shooting at us. Let's get the fuck out.
What the hell?
Just pandemonium, chaos, 45 minutes of gunfire.
Ooh.
Before it started to slow down, the shooting all in all 2 hours long of shooting, but 45 minutes of like intense army battle, fucking Vietnam, like both sides just shooting at each other, taking cover, fucking warfare, right?
It's intense.
Like true warfare. Just wild, wild shit. ATF agent Chuck Hustmeyer later wrote, about 45 minutes into the shootout, the volume of gunfire finally started to slacken. We were running out of ammunition. The Davidians, however, had plenty.
Yeah, I bet.
In all, 4 ATF agents had been killed during the firefight, 16 injured. After the ceasefire, the Branch Davidians actually allowed the ATF dead and wounded to be evacuated and held their fire while the ATF backed off. 5 Branch Davidians had been killed, and their bodies were buried on the grounds. Nearly 6 hours after the ceasefire, another guy was shot dead by ATF agents who said that he was firing a pistol at him from the compound window. That happened after the ceasefire. Of course, in one report, they say that it claims that the Branch Davidians didn't ambush the ATF. They were just desperate religious fanatics expecting an apocalyptic ending in which they were destined to die defending their sacred ground and destined to achieve salvation. So it really was like a perfect storm. Like these people were being told to expect this.
Right. And here it was happening.
And then the ATF goes to raid because all the guns and supposed drugs. But it's thought that the drugs thing was just thrown in to make sure the warrant got written. The FBI then laid siege to the compound for 51 days.
Damn.
God, this is turning into the whole fucking episode. it's such a fucking monumental thing. And there's so much stuff about it. And eventually they on April 19th, they bust in. And the FBI hostage rescue team busted in with 50 caliber rifles. And their SWAT combat engineering vehicles punching holes in the walls of the compound.
That'll do
it. So they could shoot in tear gas to force the Davidians out without harming them was the plan. They were going to pump in tear gas for a couple days without an armed assault. And they were using loudspeakers to tell the people they weren't having an armed assault. They just wanted them out. And when that went down, 3 fires broke out almost simultaneously in different parts of the building and spread quickly. And that footage was broadcast live by television.
Yeah, that I remember.
The government maintains. Yeah. The government maintains the fires were deliberately started by Branch Davidians. Some Branch Davidian survivors and other experts maintain that the fires were accidentally or deliberately started by the assault. Excuse me. Possibly by the types of pyrotechnic rounds that were being used by the FBI.
Yeah, could go either way.
People, only 9 people left the building during the fire. The remaining people, including the children, were buried alive by rubble, suffocated, or shot, killed by smoke, carbon monoxide inhalation, and other fire causes. According to the FBI, Koresh's top aide, Hitler-style, shot and killed Koresh, then himself, and in all, 76 people died. Complete insanity. And what happens when a madman gets, well, I should say, when a complete narcissist gets control and keeps repeating a narrative. Mm-hmm. And this is clearly a false narrative. The Jesus is coming back anytime now and the apocalypse is coming.
It's a 2,000-year-old gag. Come on, guys. Come up with some new material.
Exactly. But these people believed it to the point where they died for this. You had men give up their wives and watch their wives get fucked by this guy because he kept repeating the message and they believed it. And the alternative was, and this is, you know, you can study psychology and find out about this. The alternative is everything I base my identity on is a lie. And therefore I have to come to grips with everything not being lined up with how I thought the world was, or I can just hold all this cognitive dissonance in my head.
Right. I will morph reality into my delusion.
Yes. It's far easier to do that than accept that you've based your identity on falsehoods. It's weird. It's weird, but there it is. And you see it time and time again. I think, anyhow, whew, that was a long time machine. Thanks. I hope you enjoyed all that chaos. Hope it went somewhere. Try to beat up there at the end. Let's talk about some news.
Let's.
It's time for some news from our point of view.
glad if we could have a laugh or two. It's time for some news.
I guess people didn't see Jurassic Park. They want to play Pleistocene Park. There's actual plans. A team at Colossal Biosciences in Texas is looking for DNA of species to bring them back to life. They're hoping to reintroduce the mammoth, the dodo, and the Tasmanian tiger. They got some DNA from a species of Arctic equid related to the horse and donkey, inhabited North America around 700,000 years ago. What could go wrong?
Nothing could go wrong. I mean, I guess Jurassic Park was more blueprint than warning. Okay. Good luck.
Right? Like,
ooh, that ended badly in that movie. Let's try that. We can do better.
They said the first generation of mammoth calves could be born as soon as 2028 through a surrogate mother, maybe an artificial womb. They estimate a gestation period of 22 months for these mammoths. And this has been in the making. Like, they've been working for this for 10 years, this lab.
Wow.
They've analyzed over 60 mammoth genomes to put together the building blocks. I'm really on the fence about this because on one hand, I really want to go to a zoo and be like, woolly mammoth, yeah!
No, this is definitely a cool but situation.
Yeah. Is this really where we want to go as a species? Maybe the Jurassic Park is silly, and this is the way we need to go, like, to save the universe,
right?
As the planet's destroyed and we lose more and more species, it's like, oh no, we won't lose them as long as we've got the DNA. As long as we get it in the computers, we can bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why not? Why? Well, let's be optimists. How could you turn a woolly mammoth into a killing machine? It's just a giant muscular creature.
If there's a way, they'll find it.
I will say this. There's obviously humans and dinosaurs weren't running around at the same time.
Correct.
At least we have a long record of humans with spears taking out mammoths.
Right.
So we shouldn't be too scared. Now, if they make a spear-proof mammoth, we're fucked.
Oh, no, not that.
We made mammoths, and we realized the number one enemy was the spear, so we gave them hides that were impenetrable. Adamantium hides. Huzzah! It occurs to me that they're probably gonna create a meat industry.
Right.
How much would people pay for a mammoth steak?
A lot.
Right. In science news, NASA is gonna send a probe to Europa, one of the moons of Jupiter. It's gonna get there in 2031. So, 7 years. It's far away, Jupiter.
Didn't Arthur C. Clarke warn us not to go to Europa?
He did.
I think that was even might have been the parting words in the 2010 Arthur C. Clarke novel. What was it? All these worlds are yours except Europa. Attempt no landing there. I'm concerned.
Okay. Well, breathe a sigh of relief. They're not landing on Europa. They're orbiting it with some badass cameras and microscopes. And
well, if they detect chlorophyll, it's just like the book and we're in trouble.
There's a lot of frozen water on, well, they believe Europa's covered in frozen water, so they're sending modern cameras, spectrometers, magnetometers, radar, stuff that can see through the ice and bounce off the liquid water back to the surface and tell us how thick the ice is and where all the water is. They don't expect to actually find, aliens in the water. They're not actually even looking for life. They're looking to see if life could survive.
I'm waiting for space whales. That's what I want on Europa. I want whales under that ice.
That would be fucking cool, right? And they're like, get out.
Right. Get the fuck out of here. We see what you've done to your oceans.
Wouldn't it be incredible if we we started a space fight and the whales brought it to us and kicked our asses? Like, we were like, we're great. And they're just like,
yeah, you know, we probably got that coming. Humans are shit.
I, for one, look forward to our new space whale overlords.
I mean, they can't fuck it up worse.
All right. Before we talk about snake oil today, I'd like to take a moment to talk about the amazing gift shop over at halfcocktails.com/shop. Have you ever opened up your closet only to find it empty? Time and time again. You ever walked outside and realized, hey, it's cold. Why hasn't someone invented something to keep me warm, to protect me from these elements? Well, half-cocked scientists have released a game changer. They successfully created branded t-shirts and hoodies in the half-cocked laboratories. You can use those shirts, Ron, I don't know if you knew this, you can use those shirts to protect yourself from the sun.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Magic shirts.
These shirts provide sunlight protection. And I know some people might not like that, those pesky nudists, but I'll tell you what, these shirts are great.
They sound amazing.
And my dermatologist told me I should not have exposed skin after my skin cancer. So I recommend half cocktail shirts to cover up your skin from that horrible, horrible sun. So you just go buy that shirt, buy that hoodie, that hat, maybe all three, and you wear them proud. Tell the haters I got it at halfcocktails.com/shop.
Spend early, spend often.
There you go. Hey, you know what else is for sale? The finest snake oil this side of the Kuiper Belt.
Oh, at discount prices.
Oh, snake oil, on sale for me. Nothing but snake oil, and it ain't free.
Okay, yeah, so apparently a former chemical engineer named Jan Dell has spent a lot of time trying to inform people to quote, so many people, they see the recyclable label on their plastics, they put it in the recycle bin, but the vast majority of plastics are not recycled at all.
Sadly, yeah.
Sadly, only 5 to 6% of plastic actually gets recycled out of 48 million tons.
That's pretty weak sauce.
That's weak sauce, right? The rest just goes to landfills or they burn it and put those fumes out in the atmosphere.
Delightful.
Now, Dell runs a nonprofit called The Last Beach Cleanup that's designed to fight plastic pollution. And of course, she's got like a garage full of plastic with, you know, we all know that little recycle logo.
Mm-hmm.
The three arrows that point to each other. Yeah, it's just a straight up lie. They created 1988 as part of a push to convince us that plastic waste wasn't a problem, that we don't even need to think about it. And it worked. It worked because I don't think about it. I even knowing it, I'll put the plastic bottles, like a 2-liter bottle, I'll put it in the recycle bin.
Right.
Even knowing, like, it doesn't matter which bin this goes in.
But we're conditioned.
Her nonprofit just published a new report called The Fraud of Plastic Recycling that goes over all of the decades-long campaign to mislead us about plastic recycling. And industries, of course, knowing that the technical and economic limitations that just makes plastic recycling
right.
Not, you can't really do it at a large scale. It doesn't work. They couldn't ever, to quote Alan, they couldn't ever lie about the existence of plastic waste. So they created a lie about how we could solve it. And that lie is recycling. And it does fucking nothing. We all know about like the fucking Pacific garbage patch.
Right.
Like plastic, it doesn't go away. Plastic recycling, actual recycling, it's difficult and it's expensive. So they don't really do it. And it's wild to me because the industry before plastics was glass bottles. And that was the recycling rates on glass bottles with deposits is astronomically high.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. They found like, I don't remember the exact numbers. You can go out and look it up. But if in states where there's like a 10, 15 cent deposit. Like, everybody starts to save their bottles and turns them in to get that money back.
I mean, they've been doing that forever in Mexico. I mean, it's great. Everyone's recycling their bottles.
You know, when I worked for Coca-Cola, I remember bringing that up and being told that it was super expensive and labor intensive. So, like, the Coca-Cola preferred the plastic and the metal cans.
Right. The waste is better than having the expense of dealing with it.
The hassle of cleaning the bottles and repurposing them to get them clean enough and sanitary to repackage more soda in them was too much of a hassle. But the disposable is a lot easier to do on a scale.
Yeah.
Right? So thanks, capitalism. Woo!
Let the market decide.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because in the 80s, their municipalities were moving to ban plastic products. And that's when they were like, no, we got to do something. It's the level of, if you remember, the tobacco companies, their fight that we saw in our youth. I feel like that's the level of, like, recycling. And the plastic industry is the tobacco company being, in the 80s, they're like, okay, we know this is destroying us.
Right.
But.
There's money to be made.
We're making a lot of money. So let's pretend, let's have some doctors go out and say that smoking's actually good for your asthma.
Right. Or these new filters that are newfangled healthy filters that are full of asbestos.
Yeah. Yeah. So plastic production, by the way, set to triple by 2050.
Oh, that's great.
The best quote from that lady is, the only thing that the plastics industry is actually recycled is their lies over and over again.
Ooh, burn.
Boom. And saying that, I'm just now remembering, do you remember the commercials in the 90s where it was like, plastics makes it possible?
Right.
It would show you like a string of amazing things like these IV bags in a hospital.
Right. It's all about the plastic.
Keeping you safe from germs and shit. And it's like, plastics. Like, there used to be ad campaigns promoting the use of plastics. I remember thinking at the time, like, who's this for? Like,
right.
Like, I mean, it's not even a product. They're just letting us know that plastic's good. Like, what?
Like, propaganda, red flag.
Right. I'm actually, you know what, I should make a note to try and find a link to that plastics commercial.
Oh, I'm sure it's out there.
It's got to be on YouTube. All right. Well, hopefully that'll be in the episode description. All right, let's move on. Let's play a game of fact checking time, Ron.
You ooh, ready for this? I don't know.
All right.
Here we go. What do you know? It's fact checking time. Will you believe or be deceived? It's fact checking time. Cross my heart and hope to die. Stick a needle in my eye. Here's the quiz that all the kids call fact checking time.
All right, McConaughey.
You know the game. It's fact-checking time. I'm going to present to you two things that were in the news this week, but only one of them was fact-checked. They might be articles, might be a social media post, might be an interview quote. All of them in the media, only some of them were fact-checked. Are you ready?
I am.
Okay. Either a sketch of soldiers found in a New York City apartment is one of the earliest eyewitness accounts of the Revolutionary War, or a crayon drawing by a 12-year-old Jimi Hendrix is actually a portrait of Elvis Presley.
Oh, geez, that's a tough one. I am going to go against my gut and go with the Revolutionary War being the fact-checked article.
Sorry, Ron. Sorry. No, you should have gone with your gut.
Should have.
It's fact. It's listed as a fact check in progress because they don't know. They do know it is a crayon drawing that was made by Jimi Hendrix. They know that much.
Okay.
And it is of a guy with a guitar, but they haven't found anything to prove that it's Elvis yet.
Interesting.
The sketch was found in the apartment of an antiquities collector, and it is one of the earliest eyewitness accounts, and it's of some soldiers and some women accompanying them in some wagons and horses and whatnot. And that's okay. Going to go up in a museum, and we're going to be able to, you could go visit it, or you can just find the image online. So that's pretty fucking cool. Okay, next question. Either the Disney Corporation has purchased Epstein Island, or some people that were deserted on an island managed to spell help on the beach, just like the classic trope, and get rescued. Which one was fact-checked?
Okay, I'm going to go with the Disney buying Epstein Island being the fact-checked article. Yeah, let's go with that.
That is correct. It was, yeah. Was not an article. It was a claim on correct. Social media. Did get fact-checked. And yes, some people actually were on a Pacific island, got stranded, and wrote help really big in the sand and got rescued.
It works.
It fucking works, right? Like, hey, you look up on a map, too, where this island is. It's like the middle of nowhere, Pacific. Like, I don't know how anybody saw them.
Sounds like they got damn lucky.
All right. All right, Ron. You're one for one. And as we know... Oh, I forgot to bring up in the intro. Whether or not you win decides whether Poncho Cat, my co-host of the Half Cocktails video shorts, gets his wet cat food or dry cat food for dinner. Okay.
So we know he wants that wet food.
Oh my God. He lives for it. He lives for it. All right. All right. This is for all the wet food. Either eclipses are not caused by the moon, because you can't see the moon before or after the eclipse, like the approach to the sun and the leaving the sun. Either that social media claim was fact-checked, or the NASA moon orbiter took a photo of a spaceship orbiting the moon, which was fact-checked.
Ooh, Poncho.
He's eyeing me. He knows. He knows what's happening. He can sense it.
All right, I am going to go with the first story being the fact-checked one.
The conspiracy that eclipses are not caused by the moon because you can't see the moon before and after?
Correct.
You got it, sir. Poncho's getting yes. wet food tonight.
Hell yeah, Poncho.
Yeah, yeah.
You're welcome.
It is one of those things like the Earth is flat. Was this fact-checked? To me, like what? Why would you need to fact check that? That's on its face ridiculous.
Yes,
but it's people were spreading it, and somebody fact checked it. No, the moon is in fact the thing blocking the sun. We track the moon's path. We track the sun's path. We know when it happens. There's a reason they can say it's going to happen at this exact time, and then it does.
Right,
because that's how we know. NASA did take a picture of the moon, and unexpectedly, a South Korean spacecraft was in between of them and the moon.
That's pretty cool.
So there's this really cool NASA photo, and it just looks like a UFO, right? Like, you can tell.
Photobomb.
Right? Exactly.
Is that the first outside of Earth photobomb?
It could be. Could be. All right. Well done, sir. Well done, sir. Well done. All right. And, you know, let's wrap some things up with some feel-goods.
A gulp or a sip, maybe even a hit, and join us for half-cocktails. And join us for half-cocktails.
Okay, so there's a guy in England, South Yorkshire, England. He, like, you know, struggled with some depression. He's a photographer, and he's sitting out in his back garden, and he spotted a wild mouse, and he thought, you know what? I think I'd like to build this little mouse a house, and I'll photograph it, and maybe that'll cheer me up. So he did, and it did, and he said that he was inspired to build more because he could see the cats sitting on the other side of the fence from the mouse and it started to track the house started to attract more mice, so he started to build more houses, and it started in 2018 and it's grown and grown and grown, and he's taken these wonderful little pictures of it. It's almost like a hobbit tin that he's built and he'll set out little props and sit there and hang out with the mice until like he'll set out like a little easel with like a little cartoon crayon drawing, and he'll set out some little mouse size like colored pencils, and he'll wait, and then like the mouse will pick up the pencil to like examine it, and then he'll like take a picture, and it looks like the mouse is like drawing on the easel. It's adorable.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's got one where he made this little like camera, and like the mouse, he's got a picture of like the mouse standing up on it, like it's an actual photographer. It's fucking yeah. So he just started adding more homes, and it grew into a fucking village. It's been 6 years. He says there's at least 20 mice living there, two family groups, and it's totally given him this new drive and purpose in life.
That's fantastic.
He totally, you can check him out. He's got, you know, he's on Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok, George the Mouse and his log pile house. and I'll share a link to that in the episode description. It's really fun. It's really fun seeing these tiny little mice. But sadly, what's not as fun is wrapping up the show. Before we go, I'd like to thank Strickland Propane for the finest propane and propane accessories. We know that they're just the best in Texas. Looks like we don't have any time left for that celebrity that moonlights as a vigilante superhero. Their identity will shock you. We don't have time to tell you who that is.
It would have shocked us.
It really would have. That's on me. Sorry, folks. I'm a windbag. We talked forever about David Goresh. And I think it was all set up. I didn't even spend enough time on the actual raid. But give a shout out to Science, Congeniality, and the Social Contract, making society better than anarchy for many of the last thousands of years. And Ron, any final words or thoughts before we head out?
Just have a profitable week from the Ferengi point of view, of course.
Yes, the Ferengi. Yeah, profit is that's holy, right? That's the highest spiritual good.
It absolutely is. And take profit however you want. Spiritual profit, financial profit.
Mm. Is there anything else?
That is all.
End of list. Have a wonderful day, folks. If you had a good time with us today, you know what to do. Tell somebody that needs us. You can find us over at halfcocktails.com. We're on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. If you're in a giving mood, we're over on Patreon. I have all those links in the episode description. Just thanks for stopping by. Go out and be well.
See ya.
Now things are ending. It's time to go. No more to get through. Thanks for listening. That's our show. Ain't affectation. Oh, we're just leaving you half-cocked. Half-cocked, half-cocked. Had a good time talking today, but even best times eventually they fade away. Ain't adjuration, oh, we're just leaving half-cocked.